Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and this is another in our ongoing series, The Food Revolution Papers, a chance to look at the politics behind what's on your dinner plate. Joining me, as always, are my very good friends, the writing and research team of Manny Barling and Ashley F. Brooks. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Simon.
Good morning, Simon.
I normally like to start out with something a little lighthearted. I don't have anything lighthearted today. I have something deadly serious. And although it's not directly food and pharmaceutical related, it sort of is. Yesterday, the government released their long-awaited report on the Deep Horizon drilling disaster from the Gulf of Mexico.
Oh, yeah, the one that blamed Gaddafi?
Just about. Actually, what surprised me, though, was that I haven't plowed through the entire thing. The basic report's 400 pages, and the appendices even more. But they do seem to have done a reasonably good job at finding the problem areas. And those are just about everything you could possibly name. They go after Transocean, the owner of the rig. They go after BP, and they also go after Halliburton, the contractor that supplied the cement for the well. But there's one paragraph that I enjoyed. It's in the executive summary right at the beginning. The commission examined in great deal what went wrong with the rig itself. Our investigative staff uncovered a wealth of specific information that greatly enhances our understanding of the factors that led up to the explosion. They then go on, let me just find it here. In the years before the Macondo blowout, neither industry nor government adequately addressed these risks. Investments in safety, containment, and response equipment and practices failed to keep pace with the rapid move into deep water drilling. Absent major crises, and given the remarkable financial returns available from deep water reserves, the business culture succumbed to a false sense of security. The Deepwater Horizon disaster exhibits the cost of a culture of complacency. Now, you could equally use that paragraph to talk about Big Pharma or Big Food. Am I wrong?
Oh, absolutely right. On point. You know, basically, their culture is, oh, we're making money, life's great, nothing's wrong, and we'll just keep right on going along.
And, Simon, living down in that area, you have friends that are down in that area. Like, we haven't heard from Kendra in a long time and her friend, and I wonder sometimes how they're doing and how people are actually, what the truth is behind what's going on down there in BP with the people who have suffered from the BP spill.
Well, the financial truth is that BP came up with this $20 billion fund to fix it. They've actually spent $5 billion, and they've tightened the purse strings and don't seem to be prepared to go through with all of the great things they claimed they were going to do.
You mean the press has died down and nobody's listening, so they don't have to do anything?
That's right. They've just moved on.
So yeah. How do you get the press to get stimulated again?
I don't think you can. You know, it's a horrible situation. You know, they've caused an eco disaster. And no one cares anymore.
And I personally think with that Corexo 9500, I personally think that this is going to be a disaster like what happened with the 9/11, where, you know, here we are 10 years later and they're finding out how many people have been affected by the toxic elements that were in the atmosphere and in the environment. And I personally think that's what's going to happen down there, unfortunately. Because that Corexo is it damages people permanently neurologically, and which is in the nerves, and it damages them permanently in the lungs, and it does a horrible thing to people, which has already been documented before they put it into that water, documented from the spill up in Alaska. So, you know, it really bothers me with what's happening. And when I saw that report on the news last night, I sit and cry sometimes, because it's about human beings who were forgotten and left on the roadside like trash, and here we are in America. We're in America. But you know what? Let's go spend billions of dollars and send it to Mexico, billions of dollars and send it to another country, and, you know, wait a minute. What happened to Americans?
Well, we're going to get into a little bit of that today, and I don't even want to get started on that subject, because we'll be there all day, because the same thing happened with Exxon Valdez until it finally got to the Supreme Court. And by the time it got there, we had Clarence Thomas and all the Republican appointees, and they decided that the people in Alaska didn't deserve any damages, despite every show I've seen on National Geographic and others that show that it's still a horrendous problem up there. But then again, you know, Republicans don't think the average person deserves any damages. So I'm going to lighten this up, because if not, we'll be off on the wrong tangent today. I have a funny story. It's a man bites dog story. And I don't know if anyone saw it, but a man sued White Castle over the booth sizes. Now, I'll give us some indication what this is about. Having grown up in the restaurant business and designed restaurants while I was in college, you measure booths by a size, a 47-inch booth, a 54-inch booth, and the smallest gets down to 42. And it's measured from the center of the seat, or I should say to the center of the back dividing two booths, to the center of the next booth where it's divided two booths. Well, that size determines how big the cushion is that you sit on and how big the table is. Well, as Americans have gotten bigger in the last 40 years, booths get smaller.
Wait. In the old days, from what I could tell and what I could see in some of the movies, booths looked pretty big.
Yeah, when I was a kid, the booths at my parents' restaurant were huge. In fact, when my mother remodeled one of her restaurants, she brought one of the giant booths home, you know, one of those, the old style you see in the movies, and put it in our kitchen and took out the kitchen table. So we, in the restaurant booth in my mother's kitchen, which we loved because it had all those cushions, and frankly, it was great to hide the liver on. You know, you lift the cushion up, shove the liver under it. Oh, I ate my dinner.
Have you ever heard Manny's stories about liver as a kid? He and his brothers hated liver so much that they would find ways to hide the liver. So they would, put them in your shoe, put them down the front of their pants. They would, you know.
I think it was Wednesday or Thursday night was liver night. My mother thought it had lots of iron and it would make us big and strong. And my brothers and I hated it. So we, you know, my mother would circle the table and intimidate us. So when she was gone, you know, you'd cut up in small pieces, and she'd check your pockets, so you started using your cuffs, your shoes. I once taped a bag to the inside of my leg with masking tape so I could pull my leg in my pants. I mean, I'm like 10 years old. And I'm
you engineered this. That's very funny.
And my brothers, I talked to my brothers in the into taping these plastic bags to her leg, and it was fine to went to leave, and he had this swish, swish, swish. So we're going, oh, we're going to go out and play. So we went out the kitchen door like we were going to play so he could dump the bags so my mother wouldn't hear this plastic brushing against her leg. Oh, life's great. Back to the booth, though. So if you, when you go to the restaurant, just ask yourself, how much liver is under that booth?
And does it stick like chewing gum?
Yeah. So this guy's 290 pounds, and he's disgusted because he can't sit in a White Castle booth. So for a couple of years, he kept complaining because he'd knock his knee on the tables and the metal supports on the centerpiece. He couldn't get his tummy in there, the whole number. So he complained and he complained. So what did they do? They sent him free hamburger coupons. So after a couple of years of promises and ever-changing booths and giving him hamburger coupons, he got mad and he filed a lawsuit in federal court saying that for unspecified damages for violating the American Disability Act. And the funniest part of the lawsuit, I read part of it, was he compared himself to a pregnant woman and the handicapped.
Even though he said, I've never been pregnant.
Yeah.
I think he did say that.
Yeah.
And he is a 64-year-old stockbroker, so he's a really smart guy.
So, and it's not like he gave up White Castle in protest. He now sends his wife to get it.
That solves the booth problem.
But coming back to it, to get more seats in a restaurant like McDonald's and other ones, if they shorten the booths from 54 inches to 47 or down to even 42, it can be an extra one or two booths in a long room. And in some of these places, and I'm singling out McDonald's and the other ones, Taco Bell, Burger King, all of them, because they're trying to get the most number of ones in. But every once in a while, there's a McDonald's that's not far from a high school near me that I drive by, and my friend and I commented when the light turns red, and we're sitting there, we look in this place. Here are these kids. Most of them are pretty tall, 6 feet tall or more, and some are minorities, and some are 50, 100 pounds overweight, as we see on the news.
These are kids.
Yeah, these are teenagers, like 6'4", 300-odd pounds, and they can't get in the booths either. So as Americans get larger and larger, the tables are getting smaller and smaller.
Well, isn't it? I mean, that has been a problem with the airline industry for years.
Oh, I was going to get to that, too. I had a funny story. I had to fly to Dallas, and it was a Monday, and I had to fly there in business and fly back the same day. It was a meeting. It actually occurred in the airport and went a couple hours. I get back to my plane and get in, and it's jammed. I mean, I didn't realize. It was a short notice. I couldn't get business class, so I'm in the back of the bus, and I go to sit down. I look at the guy near the window, and I had the middle seat. I went, oh, God, this guy's bigger than I am. I'm about 6'2", and this guy's about 6'4", and looked like an ex-football player. Well, it turned out he was an ex-football player, and we're talking, and we're just crammed and going, oh, this is going to be a long flight, and I look up, and this guy's putting his luggage up in there above our overhead. He's about 6'4", about 320. And he looks down and he goes, hi, Bob. And they were both ex-offensive linemen in their 40s who played back in the 60s. And he sits down next to me. So I got two guys, 6'5", over 300 pounds, and I'm in the middle. So I had to fly all the way from Dallas to L.A., which is probably better than Ashley, who got squished by a woman over 300 pounds.
Oh, my gosh. That was horrible. My sister passed away. I'm going back to Ohio. I am just beyond upset. I mean, as you could imagine, I'm trying to keep it together. I go to sit in my seat, but there's a woman she had lifted the thing in the middle, the thing, and I was on the outside aisle, and there were no other seats on the plane, and her whole body went halfway into my seat. And she was sweaty and, it was just a horrible experience, and all she could talk about is how her daddy had murdered somebody, and she was going back to take care of it. And that was my experience. And afterwards, I had contacted the airline. I said, people who have special needs actually need two seats, and this really needs to be accommodated. But I should not have to be punished for it, And so the woman's attitude of the airline proceeded to say to me, well, that's too bad. We can't all afford two seats. Obviously, you can. And that was the end of that. That was Americans taking care of Americans, right, Manny? Airlines taking care of airlines.
Well, actually, that's more of a positive attitude than I would have expected from them. But let's move on to today's show. Today we're going around the world for food politics to discuss vaccines. But we want to warn everybody, we're not experts in this area. We're as concerned as humans and citizens of this country about the arguments, the misinformation, and other things that involve vaccines. If you have children or you intend to have any in the future, this is important information for you to consider. We cannot provide the answers, but we can provide the questions for you to research on your own. You cannot rely upon doctors who just parrot the drug company's prepared marketing answers. You can't rely on the print media, as they're corrupted by the drug companies that run full-page ads. They can't afford to offend them, especially these days when newspapers are dying. You can't rely upon the television news either, because more than 90% of their advertising dollars come from food and drug companies. Because most of the cases, food companies own drug companies, whereas the drug companies own food companies. They're in the same business together, big pharma, big food. But as an example, on last night's show, Dr. John LaPook, while squirming in his chair, literally read information of a drug company's marketing brochure and disseminated some of the most inaccurate and misleading information I've heard in a long time. Obviously, he was told not to offend the station sponsors. But first, we'll take another look at the turkey burger recall at Cargill. Will it surprise our listeners to learn that there was another turkey burger recall in early September? Did anyone read about it in the newspapers or see it on TV? I found the recall in the bottom of page 4 of a local newspaper. The article was so short and hidden among other brief news releases that I almost didn't see it.
That's because it was 9/11.
Right. They released a shocking notice to Americans on the morning of 9/11 while everybody was watching the ceremonies or watching the football games. How's that, Simon? Do you like that kind of notice from our government?
I do, and or rather I don't. I was being facetious. What I'm interested in knowing is what date was the recall actually, actually happened, and when was it reported? As I understand it, it was not actually on the 11th, or am I wrong?
No, it was actually, the issue came back, I thought it was on the 4th after the weekend, and they literally sat on it for the entire week before electing to do it. And by the way, it's 185,000 pounds of ground turkey products. I mean, it's not some small amount. On August 3rd, they recalled 36 million pounds. I mean,
now, this isn't just salmonella. This is contaminated with the salmonella Heidelberg, which is antibiotic-resistant salmonella. So this is really a very dangerous thing, and they've gone from, you're saying, the 4th to the 11th to report it?
Yeah, and worse than that, it happened at the same place in Arkansas after all these public releases about how they found a board to institute new policies and all this other stuff. But I got to read a couple things and ask you about this, Simon. First of all, let's talk about what the products are there. We're talking about honeysuckle white chubs, chickens, 16 ounces of a 1 pound.
Turkeys,
I'm sorry. And you look at the other one. How about fresh brown turkey trays, which are very popular? And that's that honeysuckle brand. But when I look at that, this is what jumps out at me. Ground turkey with used or freeze dates by September 10th, 2011, and others with September 12th, 2011. So they waited till the expiration date so people would use them, eat them up, and there'd be nothing left. And as usual, when they said it, their concern was the turkey that people froze. So to protect the manufacturer, they sat on this. And so it's just not that. It's Kroger ground turkey. Okay? So you shop at Kroger, then those have some longer ones. The Kroger ones, the freeze dates are September 17th, 18th, or 19th. At least you have a chance of finding that before you do it. And, of course, they're like 16-ounce trays of ground turkey, again, from Honeysuckle. You've got fresh ground turkey patties, all of them with due dates between the 15th and 17th. So basically, their solution, when you read their press release, is, oh, don't worry, wash your hands with warm water, soapy water, for at least 20 seconds before and after handling raw meat and poultry. How many people, I wash my hands before I cook, and sometimes I wash them a couple times while I'm cooking, but according to this, every 2 minutes, you almost need a nurse next to you to hold your hands up and go, nurse, hands, and have someone wash like during surgery, okay? So if go ahead.
Obviously, selecting September the 11th was a great move in that they knew that the news would be buried. But I'll bet that had this happened in August or November, they would have still played the same game. That is, announce bad news on a Sunday when no one's listening.
No question.
Yeah,
no question.
I mean, right. No one cares. The news people don't care. They're, enjoying the weekend. If you've got really, really bad news, release it on a Sunday, and everything will have blown over by Monday. Because there'll be a new disaster.
And, I don't want to single just them out. What bothers me in my profession when I'm practicing law is over a period of time, a variety of different notices, like probate notices, which people probably dealt with when they've lost members of their family and other things, require you to give a certain type of notice in the paper to potential people who were, creditors and other things. So basically what they do is they give these notices to local legal papers who have a real limited distribution, and basically they hide all these announcements by doing it that way. So in Los Angeles and in the West Coast, the Daily Journal is the largest legal paper, and you can go to the notices section, and it'll read something like John Smith, who may owe your client money, has just sold everything he owns to his cousin Billy Bob, and this was a bulk sale notice. And if you don't catch those, your clients can get screwed. And a lot of my clients used to basically subscribe to something called the LA Business Daily, which allowed a special list of those so they could check them every morning, because everybody tries to sneak everything by. So it's sort of the industry standard in a lot more industries than just this, but the pharmaceutical business, the food business, are the masters of this kind of deceptive conduct. So, Simon, have you seen any of that in your time?
Just a little bit.
Is that somebody who doesn't want to admit to this, or what?
Oh, no. It's just classic damage control.
Oh, yeah.
If you've got bad news, do it on a Sunday because no one will notice.
While we're on this topic, one of the other things that bothers me is the lack of adequate foreign news in our country, and especially in the TV news. They spend 10 minutes showing you what the latest bomb is in the latest country, but they ignore things like the next story. Apparently, Salmonella, Kentucky, which is resistant to antibiotics and relatively dangerous, has spread from Africa to Europe in recent years. They've even found few samples in imported spices in the United States.
Which gets back to why I use only organic spices. I mean, I literally threw out all the spices in the house. When Manny was really sick, that was the last thing to go. I told you before, Simon, where my friend came back from Spain and said, Europeans will not use our spices. And I went through my cabinet and systematically replaced everything in the cabinet with completely organic spices.
Not only did it improve my health, but when I went to cook, I found, wow, the pepper tastes like pepper. The white pepper tastes like pepper. And a lot of people complain, and actually it's for years, that they have to use a lot of American seasonings because they don't have a whole lot of taste. Well, I can see now why, because a lot of them are genetically modified, a lot of them have MSG in it.
Pesticides.
And other things, pesticides. And when you compare the taste of a foreign pepper, an organic one versus one that's not organic, sold in the United States, you'll be shocked at the difference in taste. But
and the fact that their spices are coming in with salmonella, come on.
Yeah, well, let's get back to the salmonella. This isn't a little deal. They had 500 people in three European countries over a couple of years who were infected with this, okay? Approximately 500 people. The pathogen was detected increasingly more often during that period because not everybody reports it, because a lot of people think they just have the flu, et cetera, and they don't report it.
Or they don't know where this antibiotic resistance is coming from. They didn't pinpoint it.
So, Simon, yesterday we snuck out and saw the new movie Contagion, and a lot of it was a lot of what we're reporting now. One of the issues was what they were willing to report, what they were willing to tell people, how the Chinese didn't want to admit it started there. These people didn't want that information out. And when you look at that film, you say to yourself, there's so much damage control, so little concern about the individual. So here we have a strain, which, by the way, there were 679 cases of it found in the United States that were reported to the CDC. I've never seen those there. So here we go with a basic of salmonella. Ash, am I correct? It's resistant to Cipro, which is ciprofloxacin.
Right, and the strain is resistant to several antimicrobials, and that means that this thing, there's two things that go on when I read this. First of all, the vast number of antibiotics that have to be fed to these factory farms because of the poor quality that Cargill and these other people are handling their meats. And please, again, watch the video, Meet Your Meat, M-E-E-T, Your Meat, because you'll get an idea of how filthy and how poorly these animals are treated. So they have to give them large doses of antibiotics. Plus, they're giving them the other thing, the paline, which is there's a form of the paline that's given for, they use a different name for the turkeys, so that they can lean out the meat and make them big. And so you've got that going on. And so the turkeys become sick. They become sick turkeys that create this antibiotic resistance. Antimicrobials are given to these animals, and then it goes to your feed and to you.
You know, and to end this with this thought, and this is a quote from one of the people in charge of pursuing these particular viruses, and it's a quote, visionary and strong political leadership is needed to maintain public health surveillance in the current era of budget cutting. Well, the Bush administration cut all this stuff. They didn't devote any attention to it, didn't seem to care, and I don't think we're doing any better under Obama, because guess what? The food and drug companies don't really want you to know it. They want to handle this privately in their own separate way, and if somebody dies, somebody dies, and they just don't want it reported.
But, Manny, didn't also, to cover their ground, cargo also put new people into the food safety, their food safety, where they had Michael Dole from the University of Georgia Center for Food Safety, Barbara Masters, the USDA's food safety, and Craig Hedberg from the University of Minnesota. These are people that they put into the review panel. Wasn't that supposed to improve it all, make it all better? And
well, as I said earlier, they just had 185,000 pounds recalled despite appointing these board. Two of the members are members of a big pharma science group, are paid by them, and basically respond to their needs, written pro-industry articles. So this is one of those. I'm putting my brother and my brother-in-law and two friends on the committee to make sure I'm a good guy. Oh, yeah, right. You know, you might as well, you know, hire the Gambino mob to pass judgment with a Joe Bananas racketeering meets standards, okay? Because that's about what this is, right, Simon?
Right. And in defense of the Gambinos, I have a good friend who used to be one.
I know, and they had more ethics than American business in the long run, didn't they?
Absolutely.
So for those people go, well, what's this really all about? We found a series of articles by what I would call the loyal opposition, and these are scientists in America who get tired of the corporate BS, tired of all the games, and one day they get mad and they snap. They don't become whistleblowers. They just start publishing truthful scientific articles. And recently, a former drug company scientist named Helen Radicek wrote a firestorm of an article, and it's created a huge debate on this vaccine autism issue. And for those who are uninitiated in this, Christy Brinkley and a number of other people have autistic children, and they blame the autism on vaccines. And by way of background, a child between 0 and 2 to 3 years old receives up to 33 vaccines. I mean, I wouldn't take 33 vaccines in 2 years as an adult. It would be, get out of here. Not only, you know, I'm not going to let anybody stick a needle in me 33 times over 2 years, but the fact is, you know, that's a more drugs than the average drug dealer gets.
Well, and what makes it worse is the fact that they've doubled and tripled up each vaccine into one injection, so that, you know, you've got this counter effect happening within that one injection.
Well, I think the bigger issue, Simon, is weight distribution. I mean, you've got a child that's born 8 to, I think the average weight now is about 7 pounds on children, which is actually getting smaller. So you got a 7-pound baby girl or boy, and you start giving them a hepatitis B vaccine and a half a dozen other ones. I mean, that child has less blood in it than your cat. I've never seen an article saying how much blood is in an 8-pound child, but if you consider you got 8 pints of blood, it was 7 or 8 pints of blood in a human being, right? Which is 2 pounds, and if you're a 150-pound male, it's less than 1%. So an 8-pound child could have literally a half a pint of blood in his entire body, maybe even less. So into that blood system, that tender tissue, at a time when their kidneys aren't really responding, their liver isn't fully developed yet, you're pumping in these drugs that are not tested, not researched, going, oh, yeah, this is going to save this child from hepatitis B. Well, I don't know too many 8-pound, 1-week-old or 2-day-old drug users, do you?
No, and this is what really bothers me. I mean, why the need to give a Hep B shot, and I believe that don't they do this generally in something like the first 24 hours?
That's right,
yeah.
24 hours.
Yeah. When I believe an infant is at its most vulnerable period. I mean, these infants are put into clean rooms, little containers, and they're guarded and, you know, it's almost, in fact, they protect them almost as well as an old IBM computer, right, Simon? You know?
Right.
But the fact is, it
goes back to why hepatitis B. I mean, what is the potential risk of a 24-hour-old baby contracting Hep B?
Well, you know, unless your nurse is a drug dealer, I guess they're okay. But, you know, most hepatitis, as everyone knows, comes from needle sharing with drug addicts. But even an extremely large volume are carried by nurses and other people in the health industry who've been affected by working in emergency rooms, working in hospitals, who've been exposed to blood transfers, not of their choosing. And usually the hospitals try to hide all this, but I want to get to the heart of the big issue today, because this one has been a debate and a discussion between Ash and I. To grow any kind of vaccine, you have to have a host. And by host, and those who've watched movies like Alien, et cetera, it has to be some organism in which the creature, or in this case, some type of bacteria, can grow. In the case of the movie Contagion, they use various other things, but they're all live objects. In simple words, you cannot grow viruses like this and vaccines in a petri dish in a lab. You have to have flesh. So what do you think they use, Simon? They use flesh from a cattle or a cow or aborted fetuses. And most of these vaccines are made in the tissues of aborted tissue. So during all this Bush time, where there was anti-abortion and stem cell research was stopped because they wouldn't allow use tissues from aborted fetuses. Well, those tissues were being used by the drug companies to create all these vaccines. And I didn't hear one word out of the Bush administration that drug companies should not use tissues from abortion. And I wonder how fundamentalist Christians and Catholics alike and other evangelical groups who are anti-abortion, who don't believe that any portion of the child should be used, feel about the fact that their child is getting a vaccination that was basically grown in a host of an aborted fetus. Does that surprise you, Simon?
Actually, it horrified me when I heard about it. You know, I listened to the stem cell research arguments, and to be honest with you, I'm not sure I agree with some of the arguments. But you know, there are other ways that you can get to the end result without using aborted fetuses. I'm sorry, that was a most unfortunate slip. No one has ever, to my knowledge, you know, stood up and said, hey, you know, we've got to stop this vaccination technique because, yeah, no one's ever said that.
No. Well, fact is, they try to hide it, and that's one of the things that upset them so very much when this lady started writing articles, because she started giving away the truth. You know, I looked at some of her report and review, and on page 79, okay, we're talking about, right in this, actually on page 70, there's two great quotes. One is the tag on some of these labels in the internal work is, quote, grown in human fetal tissue.
And that came actually from, they were doing, it came from looking at what they call diploid cells. Again, it's a cell that comes from humans. And it came out of the Nursing Spectrum Journal.
I know that.
Actual pharmacology book.
I realize that. And out of the same books comes this line, quote, an additional increased spike in the incidence of autism occurred in 1995 when the chickenpox vaccine was grown in human fetal tissue. Not only was this in a variety of reports, but CBS reported on it. And CBS, you know, they talk about, you know, this is from CBS News, which is usually very, very conservative. It says, the reports that about the same time vaccine makers took most thimerosal out of vaccines, with the exception of flu shots, they began making some vaccines using human tissue. And according to these reports and these admissions, human tissue is currently used in 23 vaccines. It isn't one, it's 23 of them, okay? And somewhere in here I have the list of them. The polio vaccine, the panda cell, the DT polio absorbed vaccine, quadricels. How about measles, mumps, and rubella? Have it. And they also have MSG in them, too, by the way. ProQuad, BioVax, MMR, which is the Merck version of the measles one, and the chickenpox shingles, which is ViraVax and Varicella, and Zostavax, which is for herpes, made by Merck. I mean, you're talking about things that are sold billions of dollars every day are made from aborted fetuses in a country where people are against aborted fetuses being used for anything.
Of course, they say in countries like China and some of the other countries that they go in and take the foreskin, and that is after, you know, a circumcision is done, and they create the DNA from the foreskin. But it's still human tissue. So,
well, and the other
who knows, because it's a mystery.
So I have a question for all of the parents listening. Did you ever see any of this on a consent form, a vaccine consent form? In fact, the couple mothers that I've discussed this with, because it's a hard subject to discuss with mothers, was, did they give you a consent form to give your child a hepatitis B vaccine in the first day of their birth? And they look at me like, huh? In fact, a couple parents, I've asked husbands, because I haven't wanted to ask the wives, whether they signed any consent forms for any of these vaccines when a child is born, and they couldn't remember seeing any of them. Certainly no disclosures that would have picked them up. I said, and someone I'd met after I read this article, I said to her, when your children were born, did you know that all this was going on? No. Did they give you anything? No. And one of them told me they had a fight with their doctor because they didn't want to give certain vaccines, and her family doctor had to say the family had not an allergy, but a sensitivity to it with the previous children, and she managed to get out of it for a while, but everybody pressured her. So at some point, people need to understand this, and this is one of the questions we wanted to raise today. We don't know the answer to this, but we do know several truths. One of them is that it's either pig, cow, or human fetuses that are used to make these vaccines. In the case of the pigs, it comes from a factory farm pig.
Well, not necessarily, though, because I was looking to see where some of the medicine's coming from, and there's farms in the East Coast where they do nothing but raise animals for medicine. So there's no answer to that as to where this tissue comes from.
Well, wait a minute, Ashley. When I looked at it, that's true. There are special places that do it under contract, but those places still use antibiotics, growth hormones, and other things.
Well, they're bioengineered animals, actually, is what they're using.
Yeah.
They're using some of the bioengineered animals that take human DNA, put it into the animal DNA, and create medicine. So I don't know if that's what they're using, too, because I know they've successfully done that with mice and goats. And
And I've seen articles. And
if you consider that success.
Right, and I've seen articles that claim they come from cloned animals, as well as other sources, and we're not saying this is true. We're just saying none of us know the answer because nobody tells us the truth and nobody makes a disclosure. And it's time for Americans to know the truth, not what is in a drug company pamphlet promoted by every doctor in this country who thinks it's more important for you to have a vaccine than it is for you to know the truth.
Well, and what bothers me with the DNA also is the fact that they – you and I discussed this because we actually had a disagreement last night. We're like, this is what it is. And the DNA is supposedly bioengineered DNA. Well, how do you bioengineer DNA unless you have an actual beginning? The beginning has to still begin from somewhere, and as you're saying, it becomes a cloned.
Synthetic.
I mean, it's like that's the gibberish that you read when you read this stuff.
Well, I don't buy into this bioengineered DNA, and I'd like to know the truth about that. Because you know what you call bioengineered DNA? A Terminator or a universal soldier, okay? If you can bio-generate DNA and create stuff, then you're creating human beings, right, Simon?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just nonsense. So I want to qualify something that occurred to me, and I wonder what your opinion about this is, Simon. People talk about the importance of vaccines, and I heard Dr. John Lepak, who we're going to whack in a minute, and on CBS News last night say that the biggest change in the world in terms of health after clean water is vaccines. And I thought, gee, you know, that's in this current climate, I don't know if I agree with him. I thought about it, and I agree he's right. But the vaccines he's talking about are the Pasteur type ones that stopped rabies, polio, and they're all virus oriented. But these are, I'll give an example. This huge story about Governor Perry and his trying to force teenage girls to have Gardasil, however you pronounce it, which allegedly stops cervical cancer. Cervical cancer is not a known virus like rabies. You can shoot somebody up and see that they get over it in 14 days. It's not polio. It's not some other transmittable virus. They don't even correctly know the exact causes of cervical cancer or any other form of cancer for that matter. So
and what really bothered me about this is written by an Eric Schwartz, who's an MD. This MD came out and said that the biggest problem is that Merck invested hundreds of millions of dollars lobbying and marketing the drug and almost persuaded Texas and some other states to mandate its use on sixth grade schoolgirls. And if it wasn't for the parents saying, no way, 637 side effects reported to the FDA through the vaccine advert reporters. 1,637 side effects found. Come on, approximately 77% of the adverse reactions were typical, including pain, itching, fever, nausea, dizziness, and pregnant moms, where they tested on pregnant moms, they aborted. 42 pregnant moms aborted.
Uh-huh.
And they ended up with this with during the clinical trials. They found that 5 cases of birth defects among women receiving it within 30 days of conception. Now, this is just for them to say, you know, let's give the Gardasil to all these children, knowing that you can possibly affect them for the rest of their lives, and maybe they'll have problems having children.
Well, you know, actually, this reminds me of these two idiot doctors paid by the drug companies to say that they should put statin drugs in our water supply because it would make everybody in the world healthier.
That was definitely a doctor who definitely needs to go read some books.
You know, and speaking of that, Simon, there are a whole bunch of official public health documents which are either you have to search for that were included in these articles and exposés that say most of the people stricken with measles have had the full array of the 3 MMR vaccines. And basically they're saying in these articles that more people get sick after taking the measles than before. And basically the rate of measles outbreaks began declining during the 1970s, but now they're coming back and they're having problems with it, in part because of these drugs aren't correctly tested.
I want to point out,
and you can buttress this, Ashley, none of these vaccines have ever been tested on children or adults, nor are there any tests to prove their efficacy. So a drug company invents it, and they go, oh, this is going to save your child. Start using it tomorrow. The FDA does nothing. They don't require any testing. And then Congress passed an act that means you can't even sue them. So this has become a cottage industry for drug companies, particularly Eli Lilly and Merck, who are making billions off of this scam. And I'm not saying there aren't legitimate vaccines, and that's the point. We all need to research and look into this and decide what's a legitimate vaccine and what is a vaccine that has been prepared prematurely with no testing that's harming our children. And that's what your feelings are, right?
Absolutely. And, in fact, I went back over some old reports. When one was back in 1996, and this particular report was about vaccine side effects, their adverse reactions, their contraindications, precautions, and the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. They start the report off by saying, you know, it's safe now to talk about this because you can't sue us. That's basically what my interpretation of it was. And then it proceeded to say, it started to list through each one, and yes, we found this, and yes, we found that, and yes, this definitely goes on, and this board found that, and that board found this. While you have John LaPook coming on CBS last night saying, you know, there's really never been found any. Isn't that what he said, Manny?
Yeah.
There's never been found any side effects or any problems with any of these vaccines anywhere.
While he was squirming in the chair, rolling his hands and blinking his eyes like somebody who knew he was lying. And I feel very strongly that he's forced to give this neutered explanation, probably written by a drug company, because guess what? The biggest sponsors of the nightly news are drug and food companies. And if you offend Merck, Pfizer won't give you advertising. The industry will ban joining up against them. So they can't afford to say anything that offends a drug company or they lose advertising. But the bottom line to this is, and I want to make it clear, the problem is they don't do any testing. They don't want to do any testing. They don't want to do follow-up testing. When they have a problem, they don't want to find out what that means. And there was one that basically came to mind from the same group who said, this is all known by the CDC. They have all these documents. And the problem is not enough is known about measles breakouts among the vaccinated. So when they find people who've been vaccinated get measles anyway, instead of investigating why or checking their blood or doing a survey of all these people, they sweep it under the carpet and do nothing. And that's what we're against. Granted, it's important to have vaccines, but it's important to have safe vaccines. If you don't test them, it's a problem. If you don't follow them up, it's not a problem. And I use a drug that damn near killed me, Vioxx. Basically, they knew that Vioxx was dangerous. They knew the tests were forged, and they knew it was a fake. And for anyone at a drug company as smart as those people are, and I've represented these people, they have 160 to 170 IQs, Ivy League educations, master's degrees, PhDs, and they're going to tell me they don't know what's going on with their own product. And yet, they, when it came out, they knew it would give heart attacks. They did no follow-up. Finally, when the FDA commissioned a study to follow up on Vioxx, they discovered the big lie. So here, we have drugs coming out in the daily use that millions of Americans use that they don't follow up on because they don't want to know the truth.
Well, one of the things that is a truth, and it's an absolute, is every time I go back over what they call the adjuvant, which is the that's what's added to this particular mix of stuff they're putting together, it's to which is to stimulate the immune system. They use aluminum adjacents consistently. Animal and human studies have shown that aluminum can cause nerve cell death. The vaccine aluminum adjuvant can allow aluminum enter the brain as well as cause inflammation at the site, leading to chronic joint and muscle pain and fatigue. And one of the things that was reported in that, oops, vaccine thing back in 1996 I just read about, they consistently said, oh, this can cause Guillain-Barre syndrome. Guillain-Barre syndrome is a syndrome that has been reported over and over. This particular syndrome acts like MS, acts like it destroys the myelin sheath in the nerves. So it can cause a lot of problems. And again, you go back to the aluminum, you go back and you follow the trail, you say, these aren't the vaccines of Salk. These aren't the vaccines of back then, Manny. These are mixed up ingredients.
And these are certainly not ones Louis Pasteur would.
Oh, he'd be horrified.
So let me just run a couple by, Simon. This one, I want to hear your reaction. Here's the important anthrax vaccine. These are some of the things they don't tell you. It contains synthetic or semi-synthetic aluminum hydroxide.
Which just gets back to the same symptoms that I just talked about.
Okay, amino acids, okay, those are proteins. It involves a chloride. How about formaldehyde or formalin, which is a preservative? So they're giving you anthrax vaccine with formaldehyde in it, which, you know, we all know what formaldehyde's used for. How about inorganic salts? That means that's MSG in a variety
and
of
more aluminum.
And more aluminum.
Way to hide it.
And why sugar and vitamins in that? I don't understand that either.
Well, because they're destroying your immune system, so they're going to try to boost it with synthetic vitamins.
Right. So
okay, here's the big problem I have. And I'm going to wind the clock back a couple of weeks. We had Jan on the program.
Yes.
We were talking about vaccines and the fact that her and her husband were traveling a great deal, and finally it was time to get her oldest son, Joey, into school. Sorry, youngest son, Joey, into school. And the bottom line was she had no option but to, let them stick and prick him till they were happy. Is that the case today?
Yes. And in fact, the drug companies spend far more time, getting laws passed to have mandatory injections than they do anything else. And by the way, isn't that the issue with Rick Perry? Is he was being paid by drug companies as buddies, basically to prescribe. This particular drug to 12-year-old girls, and had he succeeded, he would have made millions of dollars. And they're trying to do this in other states. So at the end of the day, yes, that is exactly what's going on. If a drug company can walk in and they can get a state to compel students to have this, what greater marketing tool is it? It's mandatory.
You know what? I guess we could experiment on our 12-year-old youth, and it's okay. Because we'll know 10 to 20 years from now what the effect is. And if 10 to 20 years from now these young children now have cancer or they have neurological damage or say they have, some other problem from arthritic problems, which is known to happen from a lot of these vaccines, then I guess we'll know. Or they can't have children.
Right.
I guess then that'll be the experiment, right, Manny? And if
absolutely.
I'm sarcastic, it's because I'm very upset about this.
Well, how about some of these? Your measles, mumps, and rubella contain things like bovine...
Wait, start with the first one. human diploid tissue culture.
That's a human fetus from an abortion.
Or some sort of human cells going into that culture.
Okay. Then they put in bovine albumin or serum. Bovine, cow. What the hell are they taking from the cow? And then how about...
Wait a minute. Serum is blood. So they're taking albumin or serum, which is the same type of thing, from
right.
your cow.
You mean from a genetically modified factory farm?
I would hope
know.
They use something better, but I guess the U.S. says it's fine.
And how about chick embryo fibroblast? That's chicken tissue. Okay, and then gelatin. Oh, great, I have Jell-O in my MMR vaccine. Glutamate? SMSG. Okay. Phosphate buffer.
Oh, wait. Neomycin, there's an antibiotic.
Right. Oh, that's true. Neomycin's an antibiotic. How about sorbitol? Sorbitol is something you put into food, like gum, to keep it chewable. It also contains a good amount of MSG. Then it's got sucrose, which we know is a form of sugar, but that sucrose is artificial sugar.
Right, so you're giving them
aspartame,
right.
basically. And all of these contain MSG. So really what you're getting is the MSG vaccine burger.
Oh, wait, but then you get a synthetic vitamin, which we all know it doesn't work. So, I mean, there's enough studies done on that, but I guess, if we sound sarcastic of such, Simon, it's because we are. I had hoped to stay away from this, but there was a polio virus that outbreak in China, and it was a big alert, and I thought this is something Manny and I talked about where it was important to bring this up because there's a lot of vaccines going on around the country that we have to deal with this.
Right, and I just had a message come in, which I found very interesting, and it was simply this: do they test the human tissues for disease first?
No.
That's the question we keep asking over and over. And that is also one of the questions that the some of the people responding to this have said in the medical field, who keep saying we don't know what's happening with this tissue. We don't know if that's the problem because you're getting somebody else's DNA that's now in that vaccine. So, and again, we're not saying don't take a vaccine because God knows we need to keep polio and these diseases down. But by the same token, let's get the apple cart going and get them to do this upright, do it correctly.
Well, actually, I was looking for the actual host of this, but it listed it would actually became. Came from a certain abortion, and I think something
right back in the
years,
60s.
In the 60s, and they've been using tissue and
growing it and regrowing
growing it and whatever since then. But let me run a number by you. In 1987, PubMed, which is the public medical distribution of information, reported a public school, a high school, that had a huge outbreak of measles, and 98% of the kids were vaccinated. In 84, they had another one, and a population over 90% of people are vaccinated. And they had this problem in Helsinki, where populations who were vaccinated had problems with it. So this is not only happening here, it's happening all over the place. They had people die in Japan who sued and collected money, but you never hear that mentioned here. And, of course, I'm sure that the FDA said, oh, they're just Japanese. It doesn't matter.
What bothered me the most about that with Japan was that vaccine had killed – which vaccine was that, Manny? We had the whole report on that.
I thought it was the Gavisol, the one involving the girls, but I forgot.
No, it was not. It was the one on pneumonia, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, right.
Because what bothered me about it is Pfizer vaccine Prevnar and the Sanofi Aventis vaccine,
right.
which is ACT-HIB, which is actually for meningitis. Four children died after getting it, and the lawsuit they did win the lawsuit. Now, this one, the Pfizer one, is for pneumonia. So what do you think the Bill Gates Association did? Bill Gates, in his GAVI, G-A-V-I Foundation, and he goes over with all his money. Now, I think the dates on this are important because if you look at the dates, you'll find that on March 8, 2011, Japan absolutely suspended any use in Japan, 2011, March 8th, I don't remember ever reading in the papers about this. Somebody read it. I never read it. And so then Bill Gates goes over in February 14th, 2011, Valentine's Day. We have a Kenya rollout of vaccine against leading cause death of child death. Now, this sounds great on the title. Bill Gates, you know, and Melinda are doing this fabulously sponsored thing representing the U.S. We're going in. We're going to save all these children with this pneumonia injection. Do you think at any time in Africa that those people knew that this drug had been suspended in Japan because it had killed children and it was causing problems with children? There was a problem with the vaccine. Meanwhile, he goes in and he vaccinates up like a storm, giving everybody over there, oh, so many people, you know, all this. And then I thought, well, you know, at first when I read it, before I read the Japanese story, I'm looking at this thinking, wow, this is really great. The Gavi Foundation's working with all these other people. They're working with WHO. They're giving their money and their heart and their soul to help children, save them from this death, because that's what the article would like me to believe. Mm-hmm. Gavi needs an additional U.S. $3.7 billion over the next 5 years to continue its support for the immunization of the world's poorest countries.
So for those of you who want a balanced budget and debt reduction, I think that's one item that should be reduced. We have people in the United States who need that money more. And for our government to give Bill Gates, Monsanto, and all the rest of them this kind of money to do that is just shocking. And I want to point out something that really...
And I got to read that again. $3.7 billion on an injection that has been banned in Japan.
Simon, do you know that the Supreme Court of the Philippines found that vaccines used in a UNICEF anti-tetanus vaccine program contained a vaccine and a drug that permanently destroys a woman's ability to sustain pregnancy, and that they accused UNICEF and the U.S. drug manufacturer of trying to control the population? And I say that because I now want to switch to our back to Bill Gates, who recently appeared at a TED conference, which is Technology, Entertainment, and Design, that was held, I think, in New Zealand or Australia. And here's some quotes, and you can actually go on the Internet, and you can see him say this live in front of the audience. The world today has 6.8 billion people. That's heading up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%. Well, how would a vaccine lower the population by 10 or 15%? Wait till you hear his discussions here, okay? This is his response. His response was, well, you know, if people have better vaccines and they won't have a need to, and this is a quote, and so if they think having six children is what they need to do to have at least two survive, that's what they'll do. And amazingly, across the entire world, as health improves and the population growth is actually reduced. What, which doctor horoscope did he get that from? Vaccines doubled and tripled the population in this world. This is the problem with Bill Gates. He has an agenda. The agenda is reduce the population of the world with his somewhat bizarre political philosophies. And believe me, a year or two ago, my wife said to me, I like Bill Gates. He's kind of an interesting
nice
man.
Yeah, I saw you doing this great stuff, and then you read between the lines, and you get through the ghostwriting, and you go, boy, he's got PR writing for him.
Yeah, it's a preemptive strike by my wife who doesn't want to be embarrassed by my comment. Oh, yeah, you ought to, when you start reading what he says, you won't like him for very long. And if people start paying attention to Bill Gates and all these other guys, you'll find that there are a bunch of right-wing politicians who have desires to reduce the world population, enslave the poor people of this world, and experiment on them. Because guess who their partner is in all this? Monsanto. So it's an oxymoron it's an oxymoron for Gates to say he's partnering with Monsanto to better the world. Don't you agree, Simon?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you what. I do have respect for Bill Gates. I mean, he has made himself a lot of money, but if he wants to do good, spend some of that money right here in the U.S. We've got hungry families. We've got our own healthcare problems. We've got education problems. Why the hell spend billions of dollars up somewhere else?
Yeah. Well,
wait, it's not just his billion. It's U.S. billions, too.
But it's more than that, Simon. I had employees, two of them that worked for me. One was Bill Gates, a stockbroker for years, and another one worked as an investment counselor in-house for his trust. And I know a lot about what they do. But also, having represented trusts and client billionaires in this country, I know what they all do. And this is what Gates is doing. Gates bought, I think it was 500,000. He originally said 50,000. I hear the number's close to 500,000 shares in Monsanto. And they just bought a huge number of shares in drug companies. But nobody knows how many shares his trust has bought of Monsanto, Lilly, Merck, and all these drug companies. So he goes to Africa, partners with Monsanto on providing genetically modified foods and these vaccines, okay? Well, if they start selling this large number of vaccines, which they claim they're selling at a reduced price compared to, like, the United States.
Yeah, he worked a deal with Glaxo on one of the vaccines.
Well, that means instead of Glaxo making 5,000% profit, they're only making 500% profit. So when all this stuff gets bought and sold by nations, and the U.S. buys $3.8 billion worth from Merck and Eli Lilly and all these other companies, basically what happens is stocks go up. So he donates $1.5 billion, his stock goes up $10 billion. That's a pretty smart investment. And because a lot of this money is in his trust, he doesn't have to report it in terms of to the general public. So the people don't know how much profit he's really making. And it's not just to him. You know, this all started when Rockefeller was required to break up the famous Standard Oil Trust. But what happened is the Standard Oil Trust got smart. They formed all these trusts to own all these various divisions of Standard Oil, and they became more powerful and wealthier than Rockefeller was, and they never had to report it to the general public, and they weren't subject to antitrust laws. And so this was a scam by the super wealthy in the United States to take maximum of advantage. And I end this with a comment from John P. Holden, who was a science advisor in the White House, who wrote a textbook called Ecoscience, which calls for a dictatorial planetary regime to enforce draconian measures of population reduction via all manner of oppressive techniques, including sterilization. Okay? And this is what we're talking about is a theory that Bill Gates advocates and a variety of other people. They want to control the population with sterilization.
You know, I wouldn't have believed that, Manny, if I wouldn't have seen that or heard that article, that thing, the I'm stuttering over it.
Well, there are a lot of people who believe we should do this in Africa, which is nice, and maybe we should, but the fact is
that... No, we should never. Don't even let that cross your lips.
I never finished a sentence, as usual. You
cut it off right, that's right.
My wife always...
Oh, I get so horrified.
Well, if you let me finish a sentence, which is a problem we all have with our wives, they never let us finish a sentence. My point is, this Dragonian theory that a lot of people think is right, people who live in those countries think is wrong. And what is their perception of us? Their perception is that Americans are trying to hoist drugs on Africans to limit their population, to kill them, to control them, and to make huge profits. And even if it's not true, the fact that they have that perception of our country is damaging. And one of the problems with vaccines in Muslim countries, particularly Nigeria, is the Muslims are convinced that the U.S. is trying to poison them with these people, with these drugs, and control their population and make them sterile. Well, when you see some of these events, they have reasons to be frightened of us. So when people go, oh, that's just emotional, of course it's emotional based upon these facts and things, Simon. I don't know what we're going to do, but, you know, this is like watching a bad movie where governments are just running amok, because guess what? The U.S. government in the last 20 years, particularly in the Bush administration, have run amok and destroyed the image of America throughout this world with nothing good to show for it. wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Basically, we are now $14 trillion in debt, of which over $8 trillion occurred during the Bush administration. And yet, we have these problems that they just walk away from, and our conservatives go, oh, it's Obama, it's this, it's that. And at the end of the day, it's not Obama. Obama's impotent. I'm disappointed him as a president, but I'm also disappointed with the Republicans who cut his balls off just because they don't want him to be president of the United States again. And as Howard Schultz said on the news last night, everybody in Washington needs to wake up, and the Republicans need to understand there's more to this going on than the individual ideologies. We need to stop this battle of ideologies and deal with the corporate robber barons, the Mercks, Eli Lillys, the Pfizers, the Monsantos.
The Gates.
All of them are taking over this world, and that's my objection to Bill Gates. I wouldn't want someone with his political views taking over the world. Would you, Simon?
No, absolutely not. You know, I love the idea of philanthropy. If you've got money, share it. I think that's a fine, upstanding thing to do. But that's not what's happening here.
No.
It's... spend a buck to make 10 bucks.
Well, and when Gates said, I want to repeat two things that Gates has said. One of them was in his 2009 annual letter, okay? He has this paradoxical view that decreasing child mortality also decreases population growth. So what he said in this letter is, quote, surprising but critical fact is that reducing the number of infant deaths actually reduces population growth. Where did he get that from? And the fact that the world's richest man, and believe me, he is the world's richest man when you consider the trust, believes that is scary to the rest of us. It makes him dangerous. And I don't want to say anything personally bad about Bill Gates. He's basically a very nice human being, and he's a very caring human being, but his views are so twisted that they're dangerous.
I'm in shock.
Well, and yes, me too. I mean, I'm actually stuttering. For me to start stuttering, there's something, you know, my brain's bouncing all over the place because it's just so upsetting to me. And it's because I know the science behind it. I go to what else is going on. It's very upsetting.
And I'm going to add this. I actually brought up the polio virus in China. It was confirmed on September 1st. I've not seen anything in the news about it. It turns out it's genetically related to the polio virus currently circulating in Pakistan. Did you know there was a polio virus circulating in Pakistan and it spread to China?
No. You know, I was one of the people that championed the polio virus. The polio vaccine, you know, as being, hey, living proof, vaccines are a good thing. We've eradicated polio. Well, no, apparently we haven't.
No, it's on the rise again. And this particular form of polio bothers me in China, which is why I'm bringing it up, because there's no vaccines or antiviral drugs available for treatment of the HFMD version of it, and little research has done it. The virus that causes the disease. This is exactly what happened in the movie Contagion, and this is what we need to be concerned about. But the point we're talking about is the disinformation, the lack of information, of vital news to Americans when they'd rather show some school child making a cartoon and to show how our schools are working on the news. You know, and so basically, we're not talking about a small amount. They're targeting 3.8 million 15 years or younger for vaccine shots and other types of shots in districts of China.
But they're vaccinating.
Wait a minute.
Okay.
And it started an outbreak of hand, foot, and mouth disease with 41,000 infections and 18 deaths in China last year. I haven't read about that one either. And now there are 80,000 recorded cases of the disease just in China for 2007. Who ever heard of that?
I didn't.
No, neither did I until I read this.
But the targeting of the vaccine, Manny, that's bothersome to me, is they targeted 3.8 million age 15 years, as you said, and for the children. But the start of it is there's no vaccine or antiviral drug available for the treatment of this particular polio, yet they turn around and they vaccinate 3.5 million children.
Yeah.
So, or 3.8. I'm a little confused by that.
Well, let's talk about this oral vaccine, because it's not the serum vaccine, which is much more expensive. They experimented this in Nigeria in 2005, which gets back to why Nigerian Muslims hate Americans so much. 69 children were paralyzed by this vaccine derived from the oral medicine, okay? The vaccine, it just doesn't work without causing problems. So actually you saw this bit with a guy pushing his child around a wheelchair with polio. It was so sad because they had a vaccine. So people there are refusing to get these vaccines, and they boycotted vaccine camping in Africa, which is Nigeria, I think, is the most populous country there, because of what Americans claim to be unfounded fears the vaccine was a Western plot to sterilize Muslims.
But let's get back a second. An oral polio vaccine containing a weakened version of this polio virus was given to the children in Nigeria. Children who had been vaccinated then passed this virus into the water supply. So other children would then play and drink the water, and they would pick up this weakened vaccine, how weak is that, for protection against polio, and that would pass to the unimmunized children. So it can mutate into a form that was dangerous, and it sparked an outbreak in Nigeria. So the actual prevention actually caused the event.
And this, Simon, this wasn't the first time. 22 children were paralyzed in the Dominican Republic and Haiti from polio in 2001 from the same problem Ash is describing. So whether or not the Muslims in Nigeria are correct that we are trying to sterilize them or not, it's not important. What's important is the perception of what Americans are doing, that we've become so dastardly to this, the people in this country, they don't even trust us when we try to give them medical help or do the right thing, if it is, in fact, the right thing, because who knows, which is the questions we're raising on this show. We don't know the answers to these questions, and the only people who do know the answers are the drug manufacturers who aren't going to tell you, because all they care about is how many drugs they sell and how much money they make. And so a bunch of African children die. Yeah, they're not important.
Or they're paralyzed. So what?
Yeah.
It's over there. It's not here. We don't have to see it.
Yeah. So, you know, basically, all we're doing is creating havoc around the world. And when I hear the President of the United States, okay, say that one of our problems is improving exports. Well, if you're only going to export genetically modified foods and dangerous vaccines.
And synthetic vaccines.
And synthetic vitamins and food contaminated with GMOs that nobody wants. Europe, Japan, Asia, anywhere else, why do you think our exports have dropped so much? We don't even make decent cars worth exporting, so we have to make cars there. So when I hear this talk about we need to increase exports, no, we need to straighten out American corporations, make them produce products that are worth exporting, and make them conform to the rules of the rest of the world. They're not power brokers. They're not independent governments. They may own the United States, which is the government of the corporations, by the corporations, and for the corporations, but they're not a government. We are no longer a government of the people, and we no longer have corporate executives who care about the people. They just care about their stock options and bonuses and their salary. And when you look at their salaries that are obscene, why should they care about you and I, let alone care about Africans? I mean, they're the lowest rung of the ladder. And I think most of our listeners agree they don't even care about the American poor. And at some point, we all need to stand up and do something about it.
And there's whistleblowers right now, Manny, that are standing up and talking, too. There's whistleblowers from the Bill Gates that if you go to YouTube, you can find things, whistleblowers. Look on Bill Gates whistleblower, and you'll find some whistleblowers. There's also a Dr. John Renkin Verapin, who worked for Eli Lilly 35 years, and Eli Lilly is one of the sponsors of some of these vaccines, and he goes on about saying how he'd made mistakes, he thought what he was doing was benign and safe, and now he's looking back, he realizes that it was a mistake, and he comes out and says the FDA has sold out.
Uh-huh. And if you want to hear a great one, look up a Dr. Len Horowitz, a former scientist for them and drug company owner, and watch his video, that his speech he gives on how dishonest drug companies are and how awful they are. As time ticks down, I want to remind everybody, of course, we appreciate you listening, and of course, we appreciate all those wonderful people from Pakistan, India, and China who've been sending us so many emails about our articles,
yes.
and Africa, Nigeria, and we really appreciate them listening. And we ask everyone in America to join us in the food revolution. Our book, The Food Revolution Papers, come out next week. You can go to our website, How to Eliminate Pain, and see a video of it, and join in. It's simple. Just read the labels, reject foods with addictive chemical ingredients, ask for organic foods, and read about vaccines. Read about the medicines you take. Don't trust what the manufacturers say. Ask somebody else. And most important, vote with your paycheck. Because if you want to extend your life, the only way to do it is to give up all this crap we talk about in our books and we talk about in these shows. And if you want your children to live longer, zero in on these vaccination issues and make sure that you create a family plan for the right vaccinations, that you ask the right questions, you make your doctors disclose to you what vaccinations are giving, what the consequences are, and understand what's happening to your child. You can avoid everything from autism to diabetes and other things. Because if you believe the drug companies are giving a child 33 injections in the first 2 years of life, including multiple ones within hours after their birth, is going to improve this child's life, I don't know what to say. Because I don't think giving me or any of our listeners that are above the age of 30, 33 vaccines within 2 years would improve our lives. So God help these infants as they're exposed to all of this. Ashley, you have any final remarks?
I think you pretty much covered it, Manny, and there's still one report with Incao's hepatitis B, which is a medical doctor, and I want to report his report, which was 29 years. This doctor was a medical family practitioner, pediatrician.
Well, we're going to come back next week.
Can we do that? That would be great.
That report.
Because that's a report that the hepatitis B just disturbs the heck out of me. 24 hours to have this injection. I'm not saying, you know, because I can as an RN to ever say don't ever take vaccines. As an RN, I can never say that. Take vaccines. They're really safe. There's no problems. That's what I have to say. But the truth is, research says otherwise. Research your information, and Manny's correct. Research it. Read it. Read the inert excipients that are in it. Understand it. Documentation is the most important thing. If your child gets an injection, make sure you document and call your doctor if there's any problem, from fever to anything else. You call your doctor, you make sure there's a record of that, and you keep an accurate record. That's mandatory.
And if your child has any symptoms at all, don't say to yourself, oh, they'll go away. Make sure you check them out completely.
Take them to the emergency room. Get a record.
So next week, we're going to come back to this topic long enough to go through what I think, and Ashley is impressed upon me, as one of the most important revelations by a doctor who's an expert in the vaccination field. And this letter that he wrote regarding the legislation that was pending is one of the most interesting commentaries I've ever seen on vaccines. So, again, please join us Saturday. We're going to jump into the Sugar Bowl on Saturday.
Oh, boy.
I do have something special planned. I'll just explain it on Saturday.
Well, we have a surprise Saturday. Thank you, everyone. Bye for
Thank
now.
Thank you. Thanks, Simon.
This is Simon Barrett wishing all of our listeners a happy, healthy, and safe life. And please join us on Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and we'll be picking this conversation up again. However, topic on Saturday is sugar, and who doesn't love sugar?
Mm.
So, yeah, until then, it's goodbye from Manny Barling, Ashley Brooks, and Simon Barrett. Goodbye.